Hello, this is Melissa. It is Real History with Melissa. 21st of August, 2025. And good afternoon, good evening, good morning, whenever you hear this. I hope you're doing well. So that song that I played at the intro was from an album entitled Miracles. And it is 13th century Spanish devotionals to the Virgin Mary. I think that the title of the song is in Portuguese. I'm not sure, but I'm not going to attempt it because I'm happy to slaughter just about any language. I'll attempt German or Spanish, Russian maybe even. I did realize though later on today, but I'll get there, that I don't think I'm willing to slaughter the Gaelic either. It just doesn't compute in my mind how to pronounce it. But anyway, it's a beautiful song, and I received the song from Elizabeth. I did a Real History with Elizabeth and her husband Andrew in the spring, and we talked about all sorts of things, including their beautiful family. And she sent me that song yesterday morning, and I listened to it right away while I was checking my messages, and it was just beautiful. It just kind of set the mood for the day. And a little bit later in the morning, I had to run down to the post office and the bank, and then I had to come home and get a few things. I had an errand to go to in the next town over. And I decided to take that with me. So as I'm sitting in my driveway, just about to pull out, I started the song. And then I drove to the next town over, and I pulled into the parking lot where I was going, and put the car in park, and then stopped the motor at the exact same time that the song stopped. And I wouldn't call it a miracle, but it was one of those happy little serendipitous things that put me in a good mood. Now, where I was going was an antique mall, and it is run by two sisters, and I have a booth there that I started in May. I was, as you all know, I was helping my Aunt Betty, just hours, a mammoth project of helping her maybe downsize at some point. She's still there at 96. She's still trying to be independent. And so I was helping her just clean up and organize. And it culminated in a garage sale, actually 2 weekends, about 4 days or 5 days of garage sale slash estate sale. And we did pretty well, but there were some things I said, you know, let's try a booth and see how that works. So in May, I started that. Now it's just break even. I wish it was doing well. Last month, Neil Foster sent me some of his beautiful jewelry. And I've got the booth looking really nice. It's very pretty and I think inviting. And I was straightening up there yesterday and I thought that, you know, certainly if I don't sell some of Neil's jewelry, I'm going to have to take to wearing one of the necklaces. It's very pretty. There's a cross I have my eye on. But anyway, back to the story of why I was there yesterday. On the contract for the booth, I have to give them 2 hours a month of whatever they need me to do. It might be helping run the cash register. Really, I'm not hands-on the cash register, but I will do packing things up for someone who's made a purchase. And I might sweep the floor or wash the windows at the front of the store, or whatever they want me to do. So I have mostly been working with one of the sisters there whose name is Dallas. And when it's time for me to do my 2 hours, I've been usually picking Thursday afternoon, sometimes Tuesday, but I, done three with her, and it's been Dallas. And I had met Agina when I first moved in, and so I knew a little bit about her, and but I hadn't worked with her, hadn't spent any time there. So I did yesterday, and when I came in, I said, "Well, I'm here for my hours," and she said, "Well, why don't you start up on your booth? That's what all the vendors do. They start with their booth." And I've always devoted another couple of hours in the month to changing out the booth or repricing things or straightening it up. I like to go down. I mean, I sussed it out right away, and I saw that the other vendors would do different promotional things, or they would change the theme of their booth. And so I thought, oh, I could do that. That's fun. This is fun. And I had already done the booth at the first part of this month. So I was just there to work for them. But she sent me up there. And as it turned out, I spent about 45 minutes upstairs. Unfortunately, not downstairs. Downstairs is prime real estate, and there's a waiting list for that. And I don't think I'll be around for that. But I am the very first booth that you see when you go upstairs. It's a nice location. And with the help of the sisters and their suggestions, I've made it look pretty nice there. So I did spend about 45 minutes repricing a few things, straightening, moving one thing from the other. And though I haven't sold any of Neil's jewelry, it has been well checked out. And last month, I sustained a theft of a small item. It wasn't anything of Neil's, but once I rearranged everything, so my smaller items are at a particular point where, because they have cameras in the store, and I just decided that I would have the smaller things there where you really do have eyeballs from down low, like at the cash register. So I haven't sustained any more theft, and I felt bad about it. I didn't tell Betty because she would have worried and been sick about it, and I called it, breakage. I think that's what they call it. So it's a breakage cost, and she will be reimbursed for that, the theft of it. It's interesting, though, what people steal. This was an oversized military safety pin, and that got stolen. I think I had a price tag on it. It was 50% off, so I don't remember what I was asking for it, but anyway, it's gone now. I'll have to check the price on it later and reimburse her. So none of Neil's jewelry has been stolen because of how I have it arranged. But it's all been picked over. I mean, they have obviously gotten things, tried them on, so I got it all tidied up neat. And I was very pleased. I stood back and looked at the booth, and I was pleased. So I went downstairs and said, "Okay, what do you need me to do?" And she said, "Well, in a bit, you can empty all the garbage," because there were some, we were doing pricing and tagging, and there's some sharp objects in there in case anybody reaches their hand in that one, or get, you know, when I get a, have them be stuck on something. So I don't know who reaches their hand in garbage bins, but I'm not gonna, I'm just there to help. So she said, right, she said, "Just sit down and, let's chat." But right when she said that, some customers showed up at the counter. They were excited. They said, "Is that china over there? Is that 50% off?" And then Gina glanced over there and she said, "Yes, it is." And they said, "Wow, that's a whole set of beautiful old china for $30." And Gina said, "That's right." So they said, "Well, we want it." So she said, "Well, bring it over and we'll start packing it up." So she put me to work cutting paper and then wrapping each individual piece of china and getting that ready to go. And that took a while. That transaction took about 20 minutes all in. And so it's a 2-hour slot, right? Remember. So by the time I've done that and emptied the garbage and worked upstairs at the booth, I only have about maybe 40, 45 minutes. And then I planned on doing another errand in town. But we got talking, and I had the first conversation that I had with Gina when I moved in May was somehow she got started on the idea that she wanted to tell me about her stories, her writing. That was it. I have no idea how that came up, but she told me that she was a writer, although she'd never published anything. And, so she wasn't a professional writer. She just liked to write. And she said she always wanted to do a fantasy novel, like, Lord of the Rings, but that kind of thing, just a big epic fantasy, Harry Potter, who knows what she was thinking, but she had that in mind. And I told her then, and this was before I started Substack, so I took my own advice. I said, you should start a Substack. And then you can do something like tell people that you're writing a novel and you want to publish a chapter every couple of months, but you're going to regularly bring them other ideas and things about that genre. And she said, oh, that's good. I am always thinking about stuff like that, but I never do it. And so anyway, I took my own advice, and later in May, I started a Substack. The cemetery. Okay, so we discovered that we shared a love of cemeteries, and we both view them in the same way. I said, I liked to go there ever since I was a young child, and I didn't think that it was morbid or strange. I remember that I talked my mother into taking us on a picnic there once, and I brought wax paper. I did the rubbings, of the dates, the date of birth and the date of death, and the names on the really old stones that you can't read that anymore. And those of you who might have seen or heard my real history about Pioneer, Texas, will know that I visited a cemetery there, and I got very involved in the stories and possible stories of the people who were buried there. And I said, I've never understood why people are afraid of death. I don't get it. And to me, it's just such a place that's full of people's life stories. You just have to try to figure out what they are. And she said, oh, I know. She said, I walk in them. And then she told me about her routine. And in about a 20-mile radius, she's got several different cemeteries that she visits. And she told me about one that was particularly nice in Burleson, which is about, I don't know, 20 minutes away from here. Maybe not so far from Cleveland, the town that she's in. And she said it's perfect because it's got a marked walk. So you can do this. It's a 5-mile walk and she can cover it. And she said nobody interrupts you and you're just free to walk and it's peaceful. And I said, oh, that sounds really neat. I'll have to check it out. And there were a few things I may share with you another time, but we really bonded over the cemeteries. And so I said, yeah, I don't get it. I said, I don't understand why people are terrified of dying. And she instantly said, because they don't know where they're going. I'm not so sure that they're afraid of dying. It's just that they don't know where they're going. And she said, I know where I'm going. And I said, I know where you're going to, Agena, and it's not the hot place. Because that's the first thing that you notice when you meet Agena is that she is bright, like light, like her face. I kept thinking when I was talking to her and looking at her that I was looking at a full moon. It was just this bright, amazing face of brightness. And I thought, wow, I can almost see a halo there. It's just such a pleasing person whose presence you want to be in. Just such a blessing. You would call her a true blessing to be around, upbeat, cheerful, joyful, enthusiastic. really great, I thought, I think. And I was thinking, I was just, it's sad that I have to not stay here. I had given notice to Dallas last month. I said, I think I'm going to move out at the end of August. I'm just breaking even, and I've tried different things here, and I'm not really making money, so I can't stick with it. And Dallas said, oh, you got to stay through September because we've got the Antique Alley and it gets a lot of traffic, and I think you'll be surprised how much you sell then. So I go home and I report that to my brother. I said, well, I gave notice and she talked me into staying until the end of September. And my brother said, of course she did. So I said, well, I really like them. And I do. I tell you what, I don't mind the 2 hours of labor every month because, like I say, they're both a joy to be around. And that was something that I have noticed, that the other vendors, they feel that way too. Whenever I'm, there just to redo the booth or something, that it's community that they've created there in their shop. I there's no other way of saying it. It's just the people like them and they want to just hang out. That's it. And so, yeah, she said back to dying and the and cemeteries and stuff. She was into the telling me all about the memento mori of the Victorians. I mean, she knew the death culture. And she said, oh, Victorians would go and have picnics in the cemetery and greetings and social thing. It wasn't at all, like an odd thing to do. And then we bonded over over euthanasia, that we neither one of us like that. And she was telling me, again, she was sure where she's going after she dies, and she's going to meet her maker, and she's going to be buried. She's trying to get an exemption or some kind of special dispensation to be buried on the land. She was born there. And I don't recall all of the details of the story. I've gotten a little bit from both of the sisters, but I do know that sadly they lost their mother when they were very young. There's three sisters altogether, but two sisters run the store. And she still lives in the home that she was born in all these decades later. And she said, I know that that's not what's going to meet my maker. That's not that my body doesn't matter in that way. But she said, that's all I've known is at home. And I want to be there when I'm gone in body. And so I'm not exactly sure how euthanasia came up, but I said, no, I'm not in favor. And I know I've had this discussion with some of you who strongly disagree. Somebody's in pain. And so I was reminded earlier in the week of something that one of my childhood friends says, and that's a nice thing, is that I've been able to reconnect with a few of my childhood girlfriends that, I was close to when I was really young, and it's just nice. They're all still here. And one of them has a way of, I think of this as a saying that's around there, but it's kind of a way of saying you should live your life the way that you want to live it. And she says, you do you. And I think the rest of that is you do you and I'll do me. But she doesn't even bother with that. That's the assumption, is that she'll do her, So she says, you do you. And I think of that a lot, that especially with COVID and that insanity of that period, and what they called it here. I don't know if this name caught on in other parts of the world, but here in the US and in Canada, they called them Karen. And Karen was the one who's like, your mask is not up over your nose, and you go and stand at those sticker things that look like feet. It's 6 feet apart. And if you're walking up the aisle the wrong direction, you go the other. That's a Karen. And I think that a lot of people saw during COVID that There are literally millions of carrots in the world. And yeah, so you do you is a good thing to remember. So, those of you who think that euthanasia should be readily available, I've always said that the slippery slope is when the state is involved. I am sure that there's a way around for the person who's totally committed to it, but I think that death is the natural conclusion to life, and we learn, we have an opportunity to learn. And Alan would say, hopefully, you're always learning. And I think that if you don't think you're going anywhere after here, then once it becomes that intolerable and that uncomfortable, then well, I can see why you would say, okay, I'm done checking out. But if you think that there is something beyond here, then up until the final moment, there are lessons for you to learn. But it's more than that. It's what being near someone when they're at the end of their life, the opportunities that we have to learn about ourselves and to learn about other people by participating in that. And I came back from Canada to be here for the last 6 months of my father's life. And it was hard because he had dementia for the last few years of his life, and he was a composer and a choral conductor and a music teacher. He had a PhD in music, and he was a poet. And it was hard to see him like that. And yet there were moments there too that were amazing in that last bit. I mean, one for instance is we had a family gathering and everyone was at the dining table, and my dad was sitting at the head of the table, and my brother at the other end. And my dad, he was really out of it in terms of knowing who people were. And so when I was in Canada, just backing up there, I spoke to him, and whenever I would talk to him from there on the phone, he would say, "Missy, good to hear you. It's so good to hear you." And my brother got on the phone at one point, and he said, he doesn't recognize anybody, except for him, who was there all the time. But he said, he just that's amazing that he knows who you are. But then when I got home, I mean, this is just what I said to myself, is that he didn't recognize me, and he was a little bit freaked out. Again, I'm just making this up, but he was a little freaked out because I think he was asking himself, if he could ask himself the question, who is that old woman with my daughter's voice? So anyway, back to the dining room table. Very not with it most of the time. He didn't really engage in anything. There were certain things that I noticed, like on television, there were certain things, if it was kind of slapstick, that he would laugh. He could see something as being funny, like Carol Burnett. And I know my Aunt Betty said, that when he would come over to her house in the afternoon when my brother was working, he would watch Andy Griffith on TV. But that one night, he got up from the dining room table and he walked into, it's an open room that connects from the dining to the living room, but there's not a door. It's just kind of a large opening, and he went over to my mother's beautiful grand piano that I don't play and my brother doesn't play, but it's very pretty there because she was a pipe organist and a pianist. And he sat down at the piano and started to play beautifully. And we were all just amazed and sat there and listened to it. And then he stopped and we said, "Oh, Dad, keep playing. That's so nice." And he said, "Oh, I can't see the music." And there was no music there, you know. But anyway, hospice came in the house. And they brought a bed, and this was the very beginning of 2022. And everybody was COVID freaked out and short-staffed, and all of the stories that we were getting. And so hospice was never really there when we needed them. They were there 3 days a week, but they didn't send the support staff in until about the middle of the day. And if you love someone, you're not going to let them lie in their own filth. So they, you know, they'd say, "Well, we'll change the sheets and we'll do that," but that never happened because, you know, my brother and I every day would bathe them sometimes twice a day and change the sheets, and it was hard work. I mean, my brother's a pretty stocky built fellow, but it was hard. And it was just a great experience. It was good for me. It was hard, but it taught me so much that period of time. And then, right at the very end of my father's life, we were all gathered around his bed, as we knew that it was then. And I was standing right next to him on his left side, and I had my hand down, and he squeezed my hand, and then he died. And these things are taken away from us when the state is involved and someone goes and does something that's sterile and antiseptic, and there's a whole bunch of staff around. You never test your limits. You don't know what you can do, what you're capable of. Anyway, that back to the store. I didn't tell her any of that about my dad. I just said, you know, we didn't agree about euthanasia. So we were again talking about her son and the rabbit story, and he just couldn't do. She made up a story, and she said, "Children, they did the where?" I said, "Well, you know, it's the internet; they're glued to that. The imagination is being, you know, really just taken away from them." And I said, "I would at the age of 11, and 11 seems to be a pivotal year for me. That's where really the whole kind of literary my voice seemed to kick in, the things that I gravitated to read and to write, that I kind of pin it back to that time." And I said, I had older cousins, and they would say, "Oh, Missy, tell us another story. Tell us a story." And I'd tell them a story, and I'd keep my 17, 18, 19-year-old cousins entertained with my stories that I just made up. And she said, "Yeah, that's missing." And she said, "Oh, maybe you can help me with my story." And she said, I just have hundreds of story ideas on my phone." So she got her phone out and she said, "Okay, so here's where I am. And before I start off with here's where she is in this story, there was a little bit more to the beginning of the story, and I'll share that, but I'm gonna go forwards and then backwards." She said, "Here's where I am. I've got a spider at a church. And he's trapped, and he's in the corner. His name is Sydney. So Sydney the spider is trapped in a church, but I can't get any further with it. I don't know what to do. And I said, he's in the church, right? And she said, yes, he's in the church. And I said, okay, give me a minute. I think she also told me he's Sydney the spider is trapped in the church and it's Christmas time. That's what she delivered. And I said, okay. So I was thinking, and she said, now you've got to keep it short. It can't be prose heavy. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, yeah, I know what you mean. Because it's going to be for children. I said, okay. So here's what happens. The church sets up a nativity scene, and the Sydney gets from the corner where he is up into the nativity, which sometimes they call a creche in other countries, but he gets there and he builds a spider web behind the manger. There's Jesus and then little baby Jesus in the manger, and then there's Mary and Joseph and the three wise men, and maybe there's a camel, whatever they've got set up there, but there's a spider and he's built his web. And then comes a house cleaning lady. She comes to clean the church, and she's got a big feather duster. And she goes over to the nativity and she's dusting it, and she looks inside and she sees Sydney and the web, and she starts to reach in there with this feather duster, and Sydney sees this just huge thing coming at him, and he's like, he doesn't know what it is, but it's massive. And then the cleaning lady said, ah, I'm just going to leave it. It's not bothering anybody. And so he escaped. And then after Christmas, they took the nativity down and he goes back over into the corner where he was. And then it comes Easter and they bring in the Easter lilies, and Sydney goes over and he makes a little home and a web for himself on one of the Easter lilies. And he's there for however many weeks they keep the Easter lilies up on the at the front of the church. And then the cleaning lady and the gardener, they come in and they take out the Easter lily plants. Sydney's on one of them, and they take them outside, and the gardener plants them in the flower bed outside the church. And then Sydney got to meet other spiders just like him. And Agina said, oh, I love it. I love it. So then she shared the rest of the story with me. I'm wired. Look at that. I've got like more strings and wires than I don't know if I can get out of this. I don't think I can. Help, escape. So she told me, where's the rest of the story? Okay. All right. So here's back to the beginning. This is what she had on her phone, because I said, can you send me that? And she said, sure. I said, now, oh, the other thing I got to tell you is that I do a podcast and I want to use this. Is that okay? I'll give you credit. And she said, okay. So Sydney the spider hangs on for dear life to the antenna of a car as it speeds through a storm. The car stops in front of a small white building. Sydney catches a ride on the human's umbrella as they whisk by. He is shook off in the corner when they place the umbrella in the umbrella stand. Sydney is cold and shivering. He slowly makes his way into the sanctuary. It's bright and warm inside. And that's as far as she had gotten on her notes. Now, I saw by the time she had texted it to me, she added in the things that I had supplied in nativity, feather duster, Easter lily, into the garden where he meets other spiders like him. Now, I am really hopeful that she will start writing and substacking, because I think she'd be quite good at it. I really do. But what was beautiful about her was her own, if you will, kind of faith and witness coming from the moon face brightness, and just what a pleasure she was to be around. And I felt it. I was conscious the whole time I was talking with her that I wanted to be light and bright and a blessing to her that, at that time. And I just think that it just felt good. It felt good. And I told her. We got to talking. I told her about somebody who writes to me. And Lassa, if you're listening, You now also have a Gina praying for you. And Lessa is a longtime listener to Alan and someone who's got a lot of difficulties, and I won't get into the details of them. But one of the symptoms is that he never feels that he's doing anything right. There's a lot of negative reinforcement. And I asked him if he ever prayed, and he said, I want to, but I don't know how to. Now, I know what kind of struggle he's going through and how intense it is. And I said, you know, help me is a prayer. Just say, help me. And you can say it as much as you need to. Help me. He said, but I don't know how to hold my hands. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, so he's getting this negative reinforcement that he's not holding his hands properly and that he would be allowed to pray if he could just hold his hands in the right position. And I said, I was trying to visualize, you know, was he trying to do that? Was he trying to do this? What it I got the sense that it was someone who hadn't ever prayed, had not been taught about it, and thought that there was a right way, a correct way that you have to do it. And I said, help me is a prayer, and it doesn't matter what you do with your hands. So now Agena is praying as well. And when I've been up, just kind of tidying and straightening things up in my booth, I saw the Christmas train that was brand new in the box, beautiful set that we had tried to sell at the garage sale, and it didn't sell. And my aunt had two. She had the engine of a train that was highly collectible, you know, one of those. And I had done the research on everything, and I'm like, yeah, that's worth a penny. And there was a woman that came to one day at the sale, and she had her two children with her, and they were looking around at everything. Now, I got to tell you, Betty is, she reads the Bible a lot. I mean, I've, who knows? I've never asked her how many times she's read it, but if I said she's read it two dozen times, start to finish, I'm probably, you know, not giving her credit for how many more times she's been through it. But she'll write down little verses for me. And so she loves to study the Bible, and her church group means a lot to her. That's Betty. And Betty also loves Christmas. She's got, you know, lots of Christmas ornaments and decorations, and she just and the trains, one of them was a gift that she'd gotten her son years and years ago, and the unopened train set for Christmas was something that she'd gotten for her great grandsons and then forgot to give them, and then they just passed that stage where it was appropriate for them. And so I had both of those out there, and the lady with the two children came through, and the boy was grabbing hold of her, going, I want the train, I want the train, I want the train. And I said, oh yeah, that Christmas train is really cool. That's neat. And she said, not the Christmas train. That's pagan. The other and he is the other one, you know. And so but well, she ended up buying the other train engine, and you know, Betty was happy, it was good. But for 15 minutes, she lectured us, particularly Betty, my 96-year-old aunt, whose beautiful home she was inside, that was filled with all of Betty's beautiful things, including lots of Christmas ornaments, about how, you know, pagan Christian Christmas things were. And, you know, I just thought, wow, you know, what a difference between somebody like a Gina and somebody like that woman who visited the sale. You know, I mean, I know who I'd want to follow, right? I know who might steer me in a certain direction, and it wouldn't be, you know, it reminded me. I think I pulled up a little quote. I like the Christian mystics. I like mystics in general because I like because it's not necessary. Because help me is a prayer. Because it's not necessary to have a medium. Something between you and your creator. You don't even need a book. It's built in, it's hardwired. And the mystics, they got that. And Saint Teresa of Avila, she said this. She was known for her humor and her wit. She was known to be a happy person. And she said, from silly devotions and sour-faced saints, good Lord, deliver us. And she was known to be joyful and light-hearted. She was an advocate in many of her things that she wrote. She was an advocate of joy and joyfulness and cheerfulness. And she was once addressing the grim-faced monks and nuns, and she said, a sad nun is a bad nun. I am more afraid of one unhappy sister than a crowd of evil spirits. And I liked that. And just this, I think it was this morning, this came in from Darren in South Africa. And it just hit me because I had just had the experience of going and talking to the bright Agena, who was bearing her own kind of witness. And, thinking about the Christmas train and the Christmas train lady. And I got this quote from Darren. He wrote, this is a quote, of all tyrannies, a tyranny sincerely exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. It would be better to live under robber barons than under omnipotent moral busybodies. The robber baron's cruelty sometimes sleeps. His cupidity, that's excessive desire, like Cupid, love, desire for anything, though. And I think if it, for a robber baron, it would be excessive desire for money. So his cupidity may at some point be satiated, but those who torment us for our own good will torment us without end, for they do so with the approval of their own conscience. And that is C.S. Lewis. And it's a little, back to my childhood friend, you do you. That's Karen, that the moral busybodies. So I got home from the antique mall and I wanted to look up and find out about the song that I had listened to a couple of times now. I think I'm going to try to do a screen share. Let's see if I can be successful. I'm not really good. Try to take some guidance and direction from both Nick Hayes and Andrea because they're so good at the whole screen share thing. And I'm not. Okay, the possibility is that I no longer have the window that I'm looking for up. So let me go back and here it is. There it is. Okay, it was occluded. So I shall try again. So I said that the song that I played at the beginning, that was from an album entitled Miracles. It was 13th century devotions to the Virgin Mary. I'm not going to slaughter the title of it, but here is the story. A Moorish woman, that's like a Muslim woman from North Africa or Berber tribe or okay, so a Moorish woman from Borja had a beautiful son. The boy became ill and died. His mother had heard of the miracles performed by the Virgin of Salus, and she decided to trust in her. Despite the objections of other Moorish women, she commended her son to the Virgin and bought a wax image to offer at Salus. She went to Salus carrying her dead son. She prayed to the Virgin, keeping vigil all night long. The Virgin revived the child, although he had been dead for 3 days. The woman converted to Christianity. So, to me, that's, I don't know, a proprioception of nothing except one of my mother's favorite proverbs was Proverbs 17:22, a merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones. A merry heart does good like medicine. And I found a merry heart in Aegina, and I really had fun there. And I wish I was making money so that I could stay and hang out there. But alas. So, real history. In January of 2023, I needed to go on a little bit of a road trip a couple of states over. And on the way back, I stopped at a house that had been opened up as a kind of museum in East Texas outside of Tyler. I don't remember who owned the house, but I did learn by walking through it. It was a pretty house, probably built in, I'm guessing maybe 1880 again. I don't remember those kind of details. I learned that the family line had died out. They'd had a little bit of money. They were the people who lived on the hill, you know, those kind. And he was a doctor, and he had been a Civil War doctor. All of it's starting to come back to me now. And he had his stethoscope and other instruments of doctoring and the bookshelf with some of his textbooks. And I could see from what was in that shelf that he was also a Freemason. It was very interesting, but the thing is that what I was thinking about when I was walking through the house is everyone has a story and it's not all bad. You know, everybody, it's not all bad. You can't look at somebody who's the rich doctor on the hill who's a Freemason and say, oh, that's all bad. At least I don't. I won't do that because I saw a poem that they wrote to their cat about their cat, Tom. See, it is coming back. Their cat Tom. And I saw a portrait that was done of the wife, and it was unfinished because she became ill and then died, and the line died out, the family died out. And but there is, you know, there was love to be seen and stories to be told. And I, walking through that house, I decided it just inspired me to start a podcast called Real History with Melissa because everybody's got a story to tell, and it's interesting to me. And I wish I could hear more stories and tell more stories because I can tell you when I go to the post office box. So, my address, you can make it out to the letter CTTM, Post Office Box 815, Keene, KEENE, Texas 76059, USA. And I say that because I like letters. I mean, this is my last haul. And I say haul because they didn't all contain donations or orders or whatever. Some of them were just letters. And I love to hear from you. And I hate that I can't get back to you all, but it's just a joy, you know, because, like, for instance, I heard from my friend Brian. And oops, I can't show you that. Oh, what was I thinking? I heard from my friend Brian, and Brian and I share a love of cats, but a lot more. He's been a good friend, and I get a lot of good support and ideas and feedback. And he has he's got a good quality of mind, a very bright mind, but he also he strikes me as somebody who would be, you know, you do you, because if I ask him for something, he'll say, well, you already have the answer. So I like that. Then I got this letter, and I knew the writing. You know, I'm like, oh. I didn't even have to look at the stamp. It was Helene from Ireland. And I was excited because I hadn't heard that much from her. She'd come to book club a time or two And I've been hearing from her for years, and she wrote to Alan before me. And I feel like I've watched her family grow up. I've definitely witnessed the addition of the new younger girl who was a baby at one time, and the dogs. And so she was telling me in this latest letter about her daughter that I know. I mean, I know her from the letter, see? And the daughter won first place for all Ireland in flute and whistle in the under 18 category of the. Now, I had to really listen hard. I listened to a few videos on this because when you're looking at the Gaelic, I'm like, I wouldn't, that would be again up there with Portuguese as a language that I wouldn't attempt to slaughter. But I think I might have gotten it somewhat close to how a proper Irish person would say it, but they have this event called the Flacúil, Flacúil, Flacúil. That's not exactly how they say it, but it's close. And they have it every year, and they have it in a different village or town every year. But this year they did it in Wexford 2 years in a row. And I was listening to a video. I'll post it up, and you can listen to this Irish fellow explain the Flacúil. And it started in the 50s. And he said it's not just a celebration of traditional music, but it's also its identity. And it's really neat. And I shared with you on another, probably another real history way back, there was her daughter in, her group, her band that she plays with, a traditional Irish group, last year at Flacúil, and they did very well. I think they were runners up or winners for this group thing, and it was really cute. And I used that music to illustrate something, but I couldn't. I don't think I'd be able to find it again because it's in Gaelic. But I was so happy to hear that. I was happy to hear from Helene, and she said she'd been busy, and that's why I hadn't heard from her. And G, my dearest friends that I did a real history with, and they just kind of dropped away back in May. And I was actually, in as much as I flip out, I was flipping out because I just, I've communicated with them all the time. I have, a huge, I have a folder. I actually have two now because it was getting too big. But when, those legal size filing cabinet folders back behind me, each one of them is like that big, that thick, with letters that I've received from Graham and Gabriella. And I did a real history with them. And I love to hear from them. I love to hear from all of you. And, I haven't done a show with all of you. And I've done, but that's not what it's about. See, it's not about the show, it's about you. And I always say when I do an episode with you, it's your, I want it to have your stamp on it. And that's why, they're different because it's you and everybody's story is different. But going back to the mailbox, I got a letter, and this one did contain a donation. I appreciated it from Joseph. And Joseph lives in Texas, about 35, 40 minutes south of me. Here's my ice drink. And this green thing on my arm, see, I tried to cover it. But if I even go to the keyboard, like if I put my hand down to type, it's like carpal tunnel, ah, it kills me. And there's another Joseph. I went to church with him and his lovely wife and two daughters. And then they took me for barbecue afterwards. Just the best brisket. I'm coughing anyway, even with the cold drink. And they're about an hour north of me. And then there's John that I haven't met yet. We've got our wires crossed. We were going to meet at the Dairy Queen. He was on his way down south. And there's Mary Beth, who I met. She's in Houston. And she was on her way to visit a friend in Dallas, and she stopped to see me. And we could have visited, hours longer, but already I was, she was running late to meet her friend. And That's been fun too. And I heard from Jim this week, and Jim is he's down south of me, closer to Austin, little north of Austin. And I have a cousin down there. I have cousins everywhere, huge family. But and I had told him a while back, he offered barbecue, and I said I will take you up on that. And I was thinking about that when I heard from him this week. It might be time road trip, road trip. She'll drive anywhere for barbecue. And so let's just see here. And that's Helene and Brian and Joseph. It's how much enjoyment I get from communicating with you and hearing from you and hearing about your lives and feeling in this, kind of digital world and the way that it is that I'm a part of them. And this, I wore this special for Faith. See, she sent me this. This Alan gave me. This came from the Shoppers Drug in Sudbury. And I love it. It could be a Rolex and I wouldn't value it more. And Faith sent me this, and it had some special thing, attached, a little thing to think about when you put it on. I forgot what that was, but it's okay because now when I put it on, all I think of is Faith, and that's nice. So the first real history I did was called Cross Country, and that was about my road trip to East Texas and the house that I went through. And the second one I did was with Faith, and Faith is in Canada. And I love her. And she is helping me right now. Faith and I meet on Zoom once a week. We're working on a big project, which is under wraps. But she's helping me with that. And I really appreciate it. And some of the early ones, I caught up with Jim, the carpenter, not too long ago, a few months ago now. And he's had a really hard time for the last while, and but he's hanging in. He's doing okay. It's just life and health and everything. Larry, and that was Larry learns about the CIA, and Larry recently gave me a really, really helpful piece of automobile advice that I think is just great to have people. It was wise advice. It wasn't just lift the hood and do this. It was wise advice, and I really appreciate that. And of course, there was Betty, and then there was my Aunt Mary. And Mary is going to be 98 in 2.5 weeks, about. So I think I'll send her some more yarn for her birthday. She knitted a big long orange scarf with the last yarn I sent, so I think that'll be her birthday present. So I'm going to just screen share again and hit a few little highlights here of catching up. And just because I don't mention you doesn't mean that you're not in my heart and on my mind. And so, all right, let's do the screenshot. I'll see if I can recover from it this time. Ah, it would be so great if I was a, totally adapted into knowing what I was doing. Right, here it is. This is the page I want to get to. So hopefully you can all see that. You can see me scrolling. This is real history. Neil is great. And I, right from the very beginning, I've been doing once a month with Neil. And he helped me out when I was helping Betty this spring a lot, and he filled in for a couple of extras, and that was great because I like to keep I like to keep it going. And Nick Hayes, of course, and Nick and I will be covering Perlandra soon, early September, late September. Nick has a new baby, And the new baby takes priority over reading a novel by C.S. Lewis, as fascinating as the novel is. The bees, there we go. Let's see. That's another Neil. I'm going to go back to the beginning. I mentioned Faith. Darren. Okay, let's see. Let's see. Oh, JP and Julia. I've done a couple with them. I haven't checked in with them in a while. I was actually going to be doing a road trip last year, a while back. I've had two cousins in Florida die in about the last year and a half. And we had been planning a family reunion, and my brothers and I were going to do a road trip. And I had actually, arranged with JP and Julie that we'd stop and have coffee. And, I wasn't going to do a real history with them. We'd just have coffee. And I'd get to meet them. And they're a lovely couple. And, they don't listen to Alan. They're just doing their own thing. And I like them. They're very different. I would say, if there's a circle and there's a circle, sometimes you get that overlap and it's just like, oh, until it's all one circle, but there's a little overlap there. But most important is that they exude light. I love that. It's just, that's who they are. But I didn't get to do that because sadly, my cousin who was organizing that reunion became ill, and she was in the hospital. She had a really bad condition in her heart, and she passed away. Michael in Sweden. I think about Michael in Sweden very often, and I have to check back in with him. Judy in disguise with glasses. Judy. I tell you what, laughing all the time with Judy and appreciate it so much. Derek and Ula, husband and wife, both artists, three young, very young children, and they have their own, coffee shop, a proper coffee shop, like, barista, good cappuccino kind of place. They sent me pictures of that a while back, and it's what I thought it would be, which is just pleasing and serene and pleasant. This is Dave in Canada, wonderful artist and musician too. And I shared some of that. And Darren, I've done several episodes with Darren in South Africa. And Darren is terrific. And he often makes me think that's really good to think. Is it not? So, Osman, he was born in Uganda, raised in London. But he is actually from Somalia. And his father was a Somali diplomat. And, like high up in the ambassadorial chain. So I can't go through all of these. I think I have to do another gratitude and thank you session in real history. I did want to met Oh, Brandon. Brandon is also a new father. Dr. Mackus, South Africa again. There's my Aunt Mary, teacher, pilot, sculptor, adventurer. Boy, I tell you what, if there's a role model on earth, Mary could certainly be one of them. She exudes light and love and laughter. She's just somebody that you want to be around. And if she didn't live 8 hours away, although, hey, I like my road trips. Peter, I've done a couple with him, and I like Peter an awful lot in Canada. I am getting concerned now that I think about it because he often gets in touch with me, and I haven't heard from him in about a week. And there's Rodney, beautiful musician, great musician. And I really enjoyed that conversation. And he's kept up the jankness mirror sight for almost 20 years for Alan and now for me. So I really appreciate that. Now, Like I said, I'm going to wrap up here, but I wanted to mention this. At the end of 2023, I did Norwegian Christmas with Siv Tove from Norway. She lived in England for years. And right before we were going to record, she told me that she had cancer and she had just been given, a very short amount of time to live. And I started to cry when she told me, and she said, "No, please don't do that. I want this to be a happy and joyful conversation that we have. This is what I would like to leave people." And it is a happy and joyful Christmas celebration. She loved Christmas. And she really got into it with decorating and cooking and baking and, so lots of highlights all of 2024 and so far into 2025, but I only made it through 2023. But I'm going to stop the share now. And I'm going to see if there was anything else that I felt that I needed to say to you today, because I jotted down. I don't often do that. I said, "A merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bone." Prince. Yes. Okay. So I did get a letter a couple, no, like probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago now from Prince. And well, we know that he's not loving the digital world. So he doesn't have a computer. And he doesn't use email and he doesn't have a cell phone, and there's a phone in the house, but I have to call at a certain time. He won't take the call until after 5 or 6, I think, because then before that it's all telemarketers and that kind of thing. And so anyway, just hadn't timed out for me to call him. So I love getting his letters because he says just really common sense things like, "Love is what is important, and being an individual is what is important, and not being part of the, digital computer mob." And so there's one other person that I want to mention before I finish up with Prince, though, and that's Andrea. And I've done a real history with Andrea too, not in 2023. I was going to get to her next time. But I want to say, because Andrea has given me some of the, not just the support on the Telegram channel and making the graphics and doing all of that, but some things that she has shared with me. I won't get into too many details because it's good to go in the closet and pray, right? You don't do it like a Pharisee where it's on display. But she's given me some insights into how what practices might be good, might strengthen me. And this began last year, just a suggestion. Would you consider? And I feel that this has, that her help to me in this regard has really helped me tap into strength and serenity. It's just been a good thing. And I just can't thank you enough, Andrea. That is for sure. And so, Prince, on Sunday morning, again, like I've had this strong feeling for, a week. Okay, got to make time and figure it out and see if I really need to get in touch with Prince. If I think it's urgent, then I can either text his wife, Sharon, or I can email his wife and I can say, I'd like to talk to Prince, da 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 da. So that was what was on my mind over the weekend, is Well, you should send a message to Sharon and just say that you'd like to talk to Prince at whatever time would be good for him. But on Sunday morning, I got a text from Sharon, and she said, let's just see if I can actually read you the text. She sent me a song. She sent me the link to a song. And for whatever reason, I'm not connected. I like to stay disconnected a lot, so I can't see the whole thing. Okay. And I wrote back and I said, you read my mind. I was going to text or email to see if Prince wanted to chat this evening or one evening next week. If so, let me know a time. Love, Nina, exclamation point, because the song she'd sent, I could see, was Nina Simone. So I said, love, Nina. And then Sharon wrote back and said, good morning, Melissa. Prince loves this song. As we were listening, he thought you might as well. It helps when we feel a little down. I said, thank you. I just listened and it cheered me right up. And she sent me back a smiley face and I said, loved it. Let Prince know that I've already shared it with Andrea from Waiting for the Miracle Book Club. And she said she'd turned it up loud on the speakers and was dancing in the living room. And Sharon said, share it. We all need to hear it sometimes. And I've listened to a fair bit of Nina Simone. I wasn't devoted, didn't buy albums or anything, but she's good. And I didn't know this song. And I saw a commenter in the comments section below it said, this is a perfect deconstruction. She just breaks down all the ego stuff, all the things that we think we need. And then gets right into the heart of the matter, which is, it's all right here. It's all within. If I said this earlier, then forgive me. But oh, I totally forgot what happened this morning. I got bombarded. I've gotten it from like six people so far. Talk about a beautiful thing and something to be thankful for. And I almost see this is why you have to write things down. And I'm looking at it. The company, Oracle Films, who did The Agenda, and I shared that movie on Substack, and that was also featuring Aman Jabi and David Hughes and a lot of other people, Catherine Austin Fitz, and so forth. And it said at the end that, in memory of Rosa Corey and Alan Watt. And they released something evidently just this morning, and it's a few minutes, it's a movie with a few minutes excerpt from Alan Watt's blurb, which is my favorite blurb, sing your song and steal some time. So now I have to leave you with Nina Simone and then Alan Watt, because Alan always gets the last word. And just in case I didn't say it sooner, one last thing that I pulled up, which I did want to read to you, because I said I like those Christian mystics and Meister Eckhart is a Christian mystic worth reading. And this is a famous quote from him. If the only prayer you ever say in your entire life is thank you, it will be enough. So have a great afternoon and thank you.
Ain't got no home, ain't got no shoes, ain't got no money, ain't got no class, ain't got no skirts, ain't got no sweaters, ain't got no perfume, ain't got no love, ain't got no faith. I ain't got no culture, ain't got no mother, ain't got no father, ain't got no brother, ain't got no children, ain't got no aunts, ain't got no uncles, ain't got no love, ain't got no mind. I ain't got no country, ain't got no schooling, ain't got no friends,
people wonder what can be done on a personal level when they look at this world and feel overwhelmed by all the terror news where everything's going to fail and epidemics are coming our way, we're warming up the planet and yada yada yada. Well, the individual can do a lot, and you'd be surprised how the largest object will come down when you just chip away like a beaver. I've watched beavers go to work on trees until they have almost a pencil point of a tree trunk balancing on the other point of another pencil. That's what it looks like. And they are terrific engineers. They know how long it's going to take to finish this tree. They know where they want it to fall, what direction they want it to fall. and when to get out of the way when it starts falling. They know all of that, and they have patience. Patience. And when you watch a beaver, he does it on his own. He doesn't go around saying, gee, that's a huge tree, I better get a whole bunch of beaver here and we can all go at it. He starts his own chipping away. He doesn't look for confirmation, am I doing a good job? He just knows he is, because he's got patience. And this big monster of a tree will eventually fall, and it'll fall exactly where you wanted it to fall. And afterwards, he doesn't look round for applause. He's done what was, for him, a natural thing. The largest things can fall by the act and the patience of someone who puts some life into what they're doing. When you realize there is a real war going on, very deceptive, well camouflaged, but you understand what it is, then you start putting your life into something that's real and worthwhile. And just like the beaver, you don't look around for applause at the end of it. The reason there's information to be passed on, it's only been the more cautious and devious way of governments, way of getting around that, that's led them to create such a system of massive propaganda and indoctrination through television and media and schooling. It wouldn't be necessary except for people who passed on knowledge and wisdom through countless centuries. The people who could point to the king and say he has no clothes and break the spell that held the masses. That's what it takes. But it takes life. And when you look at what people really are doing with themselves, they're doing what's authorized to be good citizens, upstanding, upright, and yet they're not alive, they're not living. They're putting time in, they're killing time. And as they kill time, they're killing themselves. And there's nothing more worthwhile that brings the flame alive than getting involved, keeping your cool as you do it, and passing on just enough information here and there that maybe one day will light the fire in someone else when the words come back to them that you have uttered at the right time. That's how knowledge has been passed on, because so much can be contained in few words, and the way you put them together must come from your own heart. When it does, and there's no show put on, no bluff, no con game at work, you reach people. Simply be sincere, but make sure that you believe in what you're saying first. Living is a chance. Everything in life is a chance. And only those who die internally do so, because they won't take chances, till eventually they'll be much older and they'll say, it's too late for me to alter anything. Why would you choose to live in a life of misery when the fate of the future lies within you, if you care to start utilizing it? If you utilize that drive within you in any way you can. We live in a world where most people truly are afraid to contact people around them, or simply say something they want to say for fear of breaking the silence or shattering the illusion. They want to conform. They want to give up their own personal song and conform to the authorized choir. And that's the death of not only individuals, it's the death ultimately of humanity, when you're all singing in the same choir, because that means someone's conducting you and someone wrote the song, but not you. What a dull, dreary world that would be, when there's no possible way to see variation. We can't allow ourselves to be psychologically put under by deceptions or worry or stress and fear. When you realize we're all going to die, hopefully not all at the same time, but judging from what we've seen of the past, everyone eventually dies. When you realize how precious life itself is, and that there's supposed to be a joy in living, a joy, then you have to claim that back again and tell those who are trying to destroy it to get off your back. We have a right to participate in the decision making that affects us. We don't need other people to tell us how we should be, how we should live, what we should do, in some authoritarian manner as though they came out some special birth canal. The pretense has gone on long enough, and the elite know this. They know this cannot go on for much longer. That's why the hype, to get us dumbed down by every means possible, and to make the masses more manageable and placid. Most of all, the fear-mongering in all ages is fabricated nonsense, most of it. Not all of it, but most of it. And we cannot allow that to get us down until our fire is quenched. Because a song and a person is your fire. It's the driving force within yourself. It gives you the inquisitiveness. It gives you the yearning to be excited and go and look and see and do. So rather than go through life worrying and fuming and fretting of what they will do next, the big they, do something with it. Don't simply put your time in like a prison sentence. Stop passing time and start doing something.